Welcome to Lose the Gut Podcast. It's the only podcast you'll need to have the information to lose the gut and get abs the first time in your life. I'm going to help you do this by teaching you through mindset, nutrition, and training, because these are three core fundamentals that you'll need. So let's go dive into today's episode.
All right, so welcome to Lose the Gut Podcast. We're going to be going over topics, basics, lean bulking, when's to do it, napping, and such in terms of sleep, catching up, and prep. How many days is the max you'd say you could do without a rest day? We work out around supplements that work and mind muscle shoulder addition. So I added the mind muscle, really trying to throw in some more stuff. Mind muscle, because that is one that really resonates with you guys and you get a lot of value from that one. And whenever I do more video on it or explain it, get a lot of messages. So I'm just doing that one. All right. So in terms of basics and lean bulking and what to do it, usually you want to start that lean bulk when you're at a later stage. So I would say 10-12% is more ideal. 12-15% is fine in terms of body fat percentage. But if you're trying to start your lean bulk, like it's 20% body fat itself, it's not going to be the greatest because number one, your insulin sensitivity is not going to be that great, right? And insulin is very important when it comes to really packs on that lean muscle because your insulin sensitivity is not that great. You're putting on a little more fat. It's all versus if you're leaner down because your insulin sensitivity is better. Then you're able to pack on more of the lean muscle without packing on as much fat. So if you do it at like a higher body fat percentage itself, yes, you might gain some muscle, and yes, it might be a long-term benefit in terms of when you do cut down to see that one. But in terms of like when you do put that muscle on and putting a lot more fat to as well, versus actually starting the lean bulk at a better starting position, at a leading starting point, it's going to be better because that, not only that, it's a sensitivity in terms of model perspective. But number two is your mental. Your mental is huge too as well, because a lot of people, when they start bulking, and this happens to me a lot, and I would say more recently, especially as I started a social media kind of journey, because I am putting myself out there a lot and I'm more prone to those comments and saying, oh, you're getting fat now, we're saying that. It's just very noticeable, right? But a lot of people feel this even in the day-to-day, not social media kind of world, is when they start bulking up, they're like, wow, you know, I kind of feel like I'm getting fat over here. But that's just the byproduct. And most people actually get a little fat, maybe bulk over 2 months. They're like, I want to cut down again. And that rinse and repeat cycle, at least, oh, get too fat. Then they start cutting down again. And then they bulk up for like 2 months, cut down for like 2 months. And that just gets you nowhere, right? In the long run, looking for 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, they're pretty much going to look the same. So when it comes to bulking, it's a very slow process of how much muscle you gain. It all really depends on how many years you lifted and how seriously you took it and how your genetics are and actually how well you actually put programs together, because you're actually not optimizing things. I'm going to say optimizing things, and you're probably leaving a lot of room on the table in terms of how much muscle you gain. But let's just say for me now, like gaining like 2 pounds of muscle in years, freaking amazing. And for somebody who first started working on the first year lifting, we could easily gain 20 to 25 pounds of lean body mass, pure muscle, right? So it's pretty great to kind of see that draws kind of changing there, but he looks so much different, right? Someone first starting off, and that could also kind of screw up the perception too as well. This year, two lifting, you gain quite a lot of muscle too as well, not quite the 20 to 25. But when it comes to year four, year five, and you're comparing to year one progress, you're like, why am I not getting as much muscle? And just kind of get frustrated in terms of the expectation you do have, right? Because everything really kind of boils down to expectation when it comes to fitness. It's like, so you work out for 1 year, you expect to look like I'm like Zac Efron, like a movie star or something like that, or you expect, let's say 4 months of cutting, and you have been working out for like three or four years, it's up kind of on and off. You think you built quite a bit of muscle, but in reality you haven't. And you're like, you know, 4 months of cutting, and I look like, you know, Hollywood acting like Thor, Chris Hemsworth, or something like that, right? That's your expectation when you cut down. And 4 months comes by, and you're like, wow, like, I look not like that, and get really disappointed, get frustrated, and you quit, right? So that's what happens to a lot of people. So is that expectation what they do now? And I see this time and time again. It's happened to me personally. Like, I bulked up the first 5 years when I started looking out. Only when I first started lifting, and then I did my very first step on the bodybuilding show. And I was like, wow, I've packed on a lot of size. All you have to do is doing some calculations, everything to this wall. I didn't really take into account water weights, glycogen, and also, yeah, pretty much those two itself, water, weight, and glycogen. I'll take those into account. Look at my very first cut. I started my very first cut. I was 70 pounds. I got down to 144.6. From my calculations, like, oh, I only need to lose like 12 pounds just based off like a relative body fat percentage over there, right? But I actually ended up losing like, what, 25 pounds over there to get to how I kind of looked, and I looked a lot smaller than I was because I didn't take into account water weight too as well, but also like glycogen storage, right? So, but I was just like a purely body fat percentage standpoint. I only had to really lose like 12 pounds body fat to get to the desired look I was really expecting, but there's a lot of other variables that go into that. And as I did my cut to as well, I definitely lost some muscle mass, and that is byproduct race loss. So they're going to be taken into account your muscle mass, your adrenal use, right? So with that being said, especially if you do cut down to like below 10%, you're going to lose a lot of muscle mass with each kind of pound, or it's going to be a lot higher percentage, right? If you're cutting down from like 25% body fat to 15, probably not going to lose really any at all. And if you're first time working out, you're definitely going to gain muscle, at least I think that's some time. So it's nothing to worry about. Now, with that being said, when it comes back to lead bulking and what to do it, let's refer back to that one and refer back to relative starting positions in terms of body fat. So hopefully that covers like when to do it. And the basis of lean bulking is you generally want to be in a surplus of like 200 to 300 calories. So when this surplus of 200 to 300 calories is whatever maintenance calories is, that's going to depend. Every single person's going to be different. Referencing back to my starting points, I ran a whole bunch of numbers on Google, found a whole bunch of different things, and set my maintenance calories to maintain my body weight was like 2,200. And I keep in mind, at the time when I started the meal prep, really started to get things serious, I was 130 pounds, right? It was like 200 from the maintenance self. So I was like, okay, I'm going to bulk up, but this is like, I'm really trying to bulk as much as I really can, right? So I did a surplus of 500 per day. So I had to be 2,700 calories per day. And that first week, 2,700 calories, I actually lost 5 pounds in that first week of eating 2,700 calories. So I'm being in summer that I searched up online and what I actually did to bulk up itself, they didn't match, right? So that's what I'm saying, that everybody's is different. If you search those things online with those calculators, it's going to give you a standard number, but there's going to be a standard deviation. There's a lot of those that fall in that category over there of what that kind of number is, but there's going to be outliers. But everybody, at the end of the day, the number is going to be slightly kind of different. Like exact number, it's you can't really tell by your Fitbit, Apple Watch. You have to tell by eating a certain amount of calories, weigh yourself, and retest some number. For me, I was so lost at the time that like I didn't know how to keep the macros the same, protein, carbs, fats, but increase those calories because I didn't understand protein, carbs, and fats. I had calories that weren't made up of calories themselves. So I was so confused. I was like, how do I keep the protein, carbs, fats the same? I eat more calories to begin with. So I ended up actually putting that meal plan for like a week itself until I really did more research. And I kind of learned more about it because I was asking around. I was like, okay, that makes sense. And I restarted on the meal plan. But that's a story. Getting started on the meal prep, by the way. Anyways, when it comes to lean bulky, yeah, 200 to 300 calories, the bottom remaining calories is great. So when it comes to a weight gain perspective, I probably look at 0.5 pounds per week of weight gain, right? That's more toward that lean bulking side. If you're just starting to work out, just starting to really find muscle mass on a skinnier side, it's definitely geared toward 1,500 calorie surplus. It's definitely going to be a lean bulk too as well, just because you haven't really worked before. You'd be able to lose fat and gain muscle inside. For anybody who's really more into lifting, like 2 years, 3 years plus itself, 200 to 300 calories is more than enough, right? So 0.5 pounds per week in terms of weight scale side of things, it's been a great way to look at it. So you might need to adjust on 200 to 300 and that overall calorie number to kind of reflect that one. Now, we also want to look at photos too as well when it comes to that, because we're putting out too much fat now too as well. We actually dial back. So it's kind of like really teeter-totering and kind of finding that kind of sweet spot. And yes, you're probably going to get some plateaus here and there in terms of a weekly basis. The weight's not like going up. It's also made to adjust that back and forth, but the plateau shouldn't be too long. All right. So napping in such terms of sleeping, catching up. So let's just say you had a really bad night's sleep, or you know, you went to bed a lot later than usual. We have 4 hours. So during the day itself, you could absolutely take like another nap itself for like, I don't know, maybe two naps or 2 hours to get like four, to get 8 hours total, or take one nap during the day itself. It's like 4 hours to kind of get that overall 8 hours sleep.
And studies show that actually does really kind of help with translating a total sleep, right? Kind of break up your sleep like that. Ideally, it'd be one nice long session. But I get that some people want to sleep a lot later. Some of those days, we all have those days themselves. I personally do that if I say out of night itself that I went out a lot later, came back a lot later. Like I remember one night in particular, this is like Halloween, I actually went to a party itself, which I rarely ever do. Have this long party itself. It was like an influence party, basically a bunch of influencers in my town, and they're elevated at 10 p.m. I got home at actually 7 a.m. So actually during the day, I pretty much slept for a long, long time and never really made sure I got my full 8 hours. So when I went home, I ended up sleeping at like 8 a.m., woke up like 12 just because I really couldn't sleep anymore. I did my workout, then later on in the day, I had like another 4 hour nap and I ended up to like cycle my body over there. So that's how I personally did it that day. And now when it comes out to prep, I don't know what exactly this person mean by prep for that one. And said, have some sleep catch up on prep. So I'm just going to skip that one because I don't know what prep means in that situation. All right. How many days is the max you'd say to go with a rest day if you're moving more that's around? I would say three. 3 days, then make sure to take that rest day over there because our CNS system is something that's continued to as well. Most people don't realize that. Because yes, you can rotate your schedule to literally work on one muscle group a day, arms, chest, legs, shoulders. You can have a recovery period of like 48 to 72 hours between those muscles very easily. That's what I did. I even worked out twice a day before at one point. And I didn't realize I was literally trying to get as big as I possibly could. I thought that, you know, where I worked on better. But I was getting a lot sick like all the time. I actually didn't realize how sick like I in that stage I was because I had a runny nose all the time. I was sneezing all the time. And I just felt achy all the time. My sleep quality was really bad. I was overtraining a lot, but it wasn't until like I started taking those rest days, cutting down to one a day first, and then I cut it down to 6 days a week. And then I was like, whoa, like I don't have a runny nose anymore. Like, whoa, like I'm not achy all the time. Like, whoa, like I feel like rested. I probably got a sleep over here. So I was like, it wasn't until after I was out of that situation, I was like, okay, this is how I'm supposed to feel, right? Because I was so blindsided in the moment. I'm like, oh, this is just normal. That was my normal for a good while. Like I did that for a good like 6 months. I was doing 2 days, 7 days a week. And yeah, it was a tire. That just shows how amateurs wanted to see the maximum progress. Well, that's just not the case. More, not always the better. All right. So 3 days a week, what's up? Well, 3 days on, then 1 day off will definitely be that maximum goal over there. We'll try to maximize results and stay recovered. So going back to that point, the reason why is, yes, your muscles can recover, but your CNS system, it cannot. It will not. So that's your central nervous system. And that is something that really gets taxed, especially if you do like barbell deadlifts, barbell squats, or like marble bench, basically heavier compound movements that really work multiple muscle joints. That really gets taxed a lot more, and that takes time to recover, right? So that is not a muscle specifically, it's your central nervous system. And that takes time to recover, like I just mentioned. So you're kind of hitting with your arms and shoulders and chest. And all those days, you're pretty much getting access to that system to a certain extent. Overall, you're not going to push much. You're going to sit. You're going to be feeling overtrained. Your quality of sleep is going to go down and vice versa, right? So like I kind of mentioned earlier, that's why 2 to 3 days is pretty much most of going in a row and take that 1 day off. And yeah, believe me, I would not take a rest day if I could, because I love working out. I love that feeling. And the gym is just like my therapy over there. It's amazing. So I credit the gym lots of my days off over there. Just that feeling to get from it after the workout. Feel good when you push yourself and went through that well. All right. Supplements that work, right? Supplements that work itself, I would say creatine adds down number one. Lots and lots of studies show that one. And no, you're not going to go bald from the creatine, and your kidneys are not going to take a lot of damage. It's all as long as you're drinking adequate water, right? So usually when I take creatine, I drink at least 5 liters of water with it. In the overall day, it's 3 to 4 liters of water per day. And it's inefficient enough. I should probably drink more towards 6 liters over there. I'm really looking at feeling my days. But creatine, protein powder, I would almost not call that salt ready because it's almost like a whole food itself. It just kind of protein powder kind of form. So protein is protein at the end of the day, whether it's from food or protein powder kind of version. Protein powder is very unique in the sense of, like, you know, in trouble with it, hit the protein goal, it's in a powder form, so it's not really going to go bad. Because you brought, like, a chicken breast around with you itself in no cooler bag, it's going to go bad. So also, if you brought the chicken breast with, you know, the cooler bag, you had to eat cold and it's not going to taste very great to this bowl, which can be a problem for some people. And just stick to convenience of a supplement. Protein powder makes things so much easier, right? And it's very fast digesting. It's actually very, very high quality to this bowl. In terms of, like, absorption rate, it's one of the highest for the proteins. Like egg whites and protein powder are the same, the top two highest in terms of absorption rates for proteins overall. Now, it has a high concentration of leucine to this bowl, which is the most important amino acid to stimulate muscle protein synthesis. So that's why protein is also really good, but that's not in vegan protein powders. So if you have a vegan protein powder itself that doesn't have that, unless it specifies it does, otherwise it does not. So with that being said, protein powder, creatine, multivitamins are also very great as well, especially cutting, just because when you're cutting, you typically eat less food overall. And with eating less food overall, you're not going to get as many minerals and vitamins from eating that less or want to eat less food, right? So this helps break those nutritional gaps, and the multivitamin really kind of helps fill those ones in, like, especially in, like, a supplement like magnesium. What can multivitamin have magnesium in it? Well, some too, but a very little dose. I was all magnesium on the side, because once magnesium is very important for many bodily functions, it also will obviously to as well recover your muscles better, calm you down. And the thing with magnesium, it's pretty unique in the aspect of when you're stressed, you burn through more magnesium. But also, when you don't have enough magnesium to as well, you get more stressed. So it's kind of like a vice to, or like a double cycle, which is why magnesium is also very, very important. So magnesium is one of those ones I always recommend in supplement plants. Works in many different ways in your body, and it is something that you should search on. Now, when it comes down to fat-burning supplements, your Himbine is a very effective one. It only works in a fasted state, though. It's made from, like, this bark thing. It's a very specific, like, tree or something like that. And it only really works through fasted cardio. So if you're doing your fast cardio, basically with the first thing in the morning, don't eat, you do cardio, and you take, when you take your Himbine, then you do cardio, it really helps actually burn a little bit more of that stubborn fat, right? Which is one supplement that actually really works as fat-burning effect. You really have to do it in the fast state, not fasted, not barely do much itself. Now, to the extent that that works, it's not like grand scheme, like it's burn all off. It works by, I forgot the exact mechanisms over there, but it definitely does work, but probably not to the extent you might think it works, because when I say it like that, it's like, wow, it's completely out, but it definitely does work to a certain extent. So, with that being said, that is one I do recommend for some people itself, especially if they can tolerate it. When I say tolerate it, is if you have anxiety, probably wouldn't recommend it, because it tends to trigger that a little more. And also, if you have mental health issues, that one, kind of people with mental health issues, anxiety, usually that was your Himbine kind of amplifies that just a little bit more. But if you're good on those two, your Himbine is the way to go. So with that being said, make sure to do your research on that one itself. Your Himbine, I absolutely love it. I personally don't feel any of that stuff because I can breathe mentally. Don't have anxiety. I used to have anxiety myself, but yeah, no, that doesn't affect me over here. Now, other ones that do work are ephedrine. Ephedrine is one that got banned in supplements when you had it in there. And also, I think my WADA, or like that one for where they test Olympics. This one is used to enable decongestion. It does increase your heart rate quite a bit, and it was pretty effective fat burning. I personally use it itself when I do cut down, and it's not like a big illegal drug in the sense of like cocaine or anything that's where it's going to apply a lot of things. Now, this one is going to apply your heart rate or get that run a little bit more, which is almost, I would say, like a lot of watts, because when I use it itself, I can feel it, but it's not just like I don't feel like I'm having a heart attack or anything like that. This is one you should do a little bit of research onto as well. I personally love it, because one, I can breathe a lot better. It's marketed as a nasal decongestion, so you get in the local supplement store, just ask for ephedrine, and it says nasal decongestion on it. That's the way they could sell it, and it actually really helps nasal decongestion. And my nasals my reading is very stuffed all the time. So I do take it to his walls. It's still really, really great. So it basically would take like 16 milligrams for one dose, pair that up with caffeine, because when you say caffeine, lassiparin, that's what's really, really effective in terms of like a fat burning perspective. So like 200 milligrams caffeine, we'll have some pre-workout, pick a little cotton form itself, and took that alongside the same time and took 16 milligrams of veteran. 3 hour lead to another 16 milligrams, another 3 hours. Good taking like 16 milligrams of veteran. You want to bring the dosage over there to make him last more. And some of the effects you might kind of get is basically increased movement through your day. So it might be like tapping your fingers a little bit more, or just like walking a little bit more, just a little more to your step, which is basically how you're going to burn more of those calories from a veteran to as long, one from like your heart rate, but also through your day. You're moving a little bit more than you would not usually, right? So it is a factor one over there. And especially pair with aspirin to as well, mix last even longer. So that's what we call the ECA stack. It's a very popular stack in bodybuilding wise. And yes, do some research now to see if that is one you want to take itself. I just think it has a really, or not say bad rep, but like a worse rep than it should have, because the Olympics banned it for a reason, which can help with performance in their sports, right? But it's not like EDs or anything like that, where it's like in that extent performance, right? It's just like you may burn a little more calories, and more to your stat. And yeah, some of these you just breathe better. So I actually don't know why they personally banned it over there for salt mints. All right. Now, mind muscle shoulder addition. So when it comes to the shoulders, most people have an easy time feeling in their front delt, which you should, because you just raise your hand up in front. That's how you feel your front delt. When it comes down to your lateral delt, it's your side to make it look more wide. Also your rear delts, these are ones people typically have with. It's because those motions that we do to work those muscles, we don't use them every day, right? So when it comes down to lateral delts, all pretty much I think about is I like to bring my full width gears in terms of release. If your jobs naturally going to want to shrug up. So I'm just like putting them down over there. And I think about staying my arms nice and long, right? So that was called like a boxer's punch too as well. So if you're really extending your arms out and you almost set it on you further, where it's a point you almost feel like a stretching lats, that's a point where I kind of like to start one, my motion or machine rear delt fly, but also any rear delt movements. And then I think we like to think about driving my elbows to the corner of the rear and right back down, right? So you want to preload your lateral delt to as well, since we're a lateral delt. Because when I was training to one of my friends over here, one of the things he was doing, like the cues that I taught him, but once he was initiating the movement, he was initiating with his trap. So the first thing he would do is his trap would come up, and then his shoulder would come up, right? Now, thing is, with any movement, the first muscle that needs to chase the movement is the muscle that's going to get worked on the most. So on a barbell bench press, if you initiate the movement more of the triceps, you're going to pretty much feel the triceps the most, right? But the shoulders in this case, will initiate with the traps first, that's getting out first, then they're on, right? So that's when you feel the traps the most, and that's when it's getting worked on the most. So for your lateral delts, when you do that, you want to have your arms like slightly in front of your body. So it's more like that, not directly side, not directly front. So you can pull your 45-degree angle over there. And then you want to feel that little tension over there on that lateral delt. And then you want to really raise that like dumbbell or cable or whatever like that. You might have to drop down the weight so you can really feel that first, because when you preload that delt, it's going to call over here, basically feeling that tension on that muscle first. And then you lift it off. That's pretty much all your lateral delts, right? So same thing applies with any other movement, whether that's your bicep curls or whether that's triceps or anything like that. If you initiate that movement, you feel that muscle first, then you follow through the movement, you're going to see much better changes in that specific muscle, right? So that's a big cue or a secret, I guess, when it comes to mind-muscle connection. Reload that muscle, then initiate the movement, right? Now, when it comes down to your rear delts, I almost like to have a few different cues, because when it comes to your like machine and rear delt fly, I still do the boxer's punch over there, but I bring my shoulders away from me here, so I almost like drop it down, because if you feel like, I mentioned earlier, for preload your traps over there and initiate the movement traps, which a lot of people do, that's going to be most of your traps, right? Doing all the work and not your rear delts. So your shoulders away from ears, like the box tension really, really extend outwards. Preload that rear delt, then you come all the way to the side. I like to think about pushing against my pinky to as well, so we have the resistance on the chest flap or like that, or reverse. You're just pushing with your pinky on the outside of your hand over there, that meaty part. Feel that delt. Then you want to go to the point where your shoulder blades are not coming together, right? So you don't want to bring your shoulder blades together over there, just because that's going to be more of your mid back and the upper back muscles. So you want to go to the point where you feel that tension in the rear delt, and chances are, if you do it right, you can't really donate back further. But when you do go back faster there, your shoulder blades get coming back together, and that's the point where you want to stop, right? So that's the machine reverse rear delt flag. When it comes to like a rear delt row itself, you want to basically put it at a 45-degree angle. So if you're going back in line with your body, you are bringing more 45-degree angle, and you want to go outwards, right? So if you bring your shoulder blades back together, bring your arms too close, your shoulder blades are going to initiate movements, or your shoulder blades are going to come together right away. And that's going to be more of your mid-back muscles. So you want to initiate preloaded almost a little bit where you're flaring it outwards, and you squeeze, and you don't want to bring your shoulder blades together, right? So you bring it upwards or 45 degrees, and then back down, you want to reverse that motion from there. Now, key thing with this one too as well is it's not like the lats where you want to go, let your lat have a stretch and bring it forward even more, but you want to keep it in a certain range where your lats are not getting a stretch at the bottom. So some people think like forward of motion resets and your lats are being a full stretch, but this one, it's like that point where you're in a fixed position. That's what I'm calling over there. It's a little hard to kind of demonstrate in terms of just audio. I'm sure, you know, if you're looking at a video kind of to you, it'd be a lot easier to kind of see that one. So it's more of a fixed position. Even for the reverse fly, it's more of a fixed position over there, because you don't want your upper back muscles to do the work, but you don't want your lats to do the work either. You just want that rear delt. So you want to keep the tension in a smaller range of motion. But sometimes for some people, it's like, is that the full movement? And yes, it is, because your rear delts don't really work in that great range of motion. So you want to keep the tension right over there.
Thanks for tuning into the Lose the Gut podcast. If you got value from this one and really learned something, add want to take it one further step forward so you can lose the gut and finally get your abs, just DM me on Instagram at KevinWoo_gut, and we can have a conversation to see if how to help you out. Cheers.